Welcome to the Everyone Goes 1-0 podcast. Guess that's what we're calling it today with Paul Wadlington, a.k.a. Scipio Tex, out of town or out of the studio, his own studio. BK and I have Kevin Dunn joining us today, and our show will go over TCU. It'll go over some important news and notes from the bye week around the conference, but the show would not be possible without help from a few people.
Yeah, we've got a couple of sponsors. Need to give some love to Audio Visual Consultations, avconsultations.com, the website, 512-255-8678. That's the phone number to call to get the home TV setup of your dreams. Indoors or outdoors, AV Consultations can make it happen. Also, Altstadt Beer. It is German beer made here, brewed locally in Central Texas, available wherever you buy your beer here in the 512. Pick up a six-pack on your way home from work today. It's Altstadt Beer. No impurities, no regrets.
So not only did TCU put on quite possibly the worst college football uniform I think I've ever seen, historical even, but there was some other history made this past weekend in that for the first time in his career, Max Duggan passed for more than 250 yards.
Oh, man.
And it was against the Todd Orlando defense that we have that has given us stuff to talk about for at least the past 10 weeks. And at this point, doesn't seem like it's going to stop giving us stuff to talk about, specifically real aggressive late game blitzes. And once again, Todd Orlando with a depleted secondary throws a blitz and Max Duggan throws the ball and gets a significant portion of those 273 yards and sets up a back-breaking, game-ending, game-sealing score to give Gary Patterson another win against Texas in Fort Worth.
I think there's a couple things, guys. One, we're not surprised that he went to another zero blitz, and we know that his comfort zone is blitzing.
Mm-hmm.
And just the fact, though, that he has not been able to or just doesn't realize that's got to be taken out on third and long. This team doesn't cover well, and they also don't get home on the blitz, which is kind of the point of the blitz, right, guys?
It's been the most infuriating part when you see the guy 10 yards away. You know, it's you're expecting to see it at this point. Up, that guy who's not going to get close to getting home is going to try and get there and won't make a difference because the ball's already out of his hands, but the quarterback's hands by the time it happens. But, you know, my focus after that game was obviously the next game of the World Series. So I was typing and working and got a couple TVs switched. So thank you to the TCU press people. But you had a chance to defend and make life easier for Montrell Estelle and Tyler Owens. Tyler Owens making his first real game action at safety. And instead, you made life even more difficult on both those guys. And Estelle's an athletic player who looked like he was lost out there, like he didn't know where to go whenever. And Tyler Owens looked like a freshman. And there's a lot of promise left in his career with how athletic he is and how fast he is. But whatever they did this past weekend or the weekend prior in order to try and prepare him, it just did not work at all.
Yeah, well, you got backups in there. You've got second and third stringers in there right now, and you see why these guys are backups. Now, should they be better prepared? Should they be better coached to step up and make plays in these situations? Absolutely. But these guys are backups for a reason, and I know people are tired of hearing about the injuries as an excuse, but it's just the reality. It's just the reason for why certain guys are out there and why this Texas defense is getting beaten at certain times. I will say, Todd Orlando's group played really well in the first half.
Yeah, they did.
And honestly, for the first three quarters, they did more than enough to keep Texas in this football game. It was the Longhorn offense, which we'll obviously get to in a second, but the Longhorn offense was making life very difficult for the defense. This year, it's been the other way around, right? The offense has been balling. The defense does enough bad to keep the other team in it. This weekend against TCU, it was kind of the opposite. But the fourth quarter, we saw this team break once again. And in all three losses for the Longhorns this year, for LSU, Oklahoma, and TCU, regardless of how bad the defense was for the first three and a half quarters, they had one drive where if they got off the field and got the ball back to Sam Ellinger in this offense, the Longhorns would have had a chance to either tie or take the lead late. And once again, this time it was a 9-play, 75-yard drive for TCU. Once again, the Longhorns just weren't able to make the plays to get off the field late in the fourth.
Yeah, defensively, you're exactly right. I mean, in this game especially, LSU, I think they would still be carving Texas up right now. That was a bad matchup, even with healthier guys. I want to ask you guys, though, because it seems like it gets binary and it doesn't need to be. Injuries are a part of it, And they also are poorly coached, and I think their schemes are messed up defensively.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Percentage-wise, where would you put that? How much leeway are you giving them, Joe?
Well, once you get to, like, the second stringers, I don't think you have a bunch of leeway. I think you're expect those second stringers are guys that are good enough to probably start in most cases, but have a better guy in front of them. And it is still an issue then. With you got the third stringers, the true freshmen, the guys who don't rarely play, it accentuates it. And you can attribute that a little bit more and more to the injuries. And I thought a lot of what they did was similar, and we talked about this a lot, was similar to what they did against Oklahoma State. There were some very obvious running situations where you could tell the offense was probably going to run the football, but they were making damn sure there were two guys over Jalen Reagor no matter what. And that's all fine and good, and it works. But when the plays of the game are your blitzes, your bread and butter, it doesn't really matter who's out there. It's just you. It was proven once again that your bread and butter, what you fall back to constantly, consistently, didn't work again. So to me, obviously the injuries have a huge effect on it, and you have to give credit to Duggan and Tay Barber for making that play over Tyler Owens twice late, I believe it was Tay Barber that made those plays late and beating an athletic and talented freshman. But at that point, even if Caden Stearns, even if B.J. Foster, even if DeMarvion Overshown's out there, you're calling a zero blitz on third and whatever again, and it's not working. So,
and it's predictable. Everyone knows it's coming, too.
Right. And I'll be honest, guys. I went back and did some research when I rewatched this game. TCU had 4 third down and 10 or mores on Saturday. And 2 of them were before that final dagger TCU touchdown drive. The Longhorns only brought the zero blitz on that last play, on that 3rd and 14, which obviously it didn't hit home. That should never have been called, and it didn't work. But the Longhorns tried different things on those first 3 third down and 10s. The ones before that final drive, they rushed 4 on the first play, and TCU turned it into a touchdown. It was 3rd down and 17 in the first half. Texas rushed 4, dropped 7 into a soft zone, and Texas was covering the first down, which was about the 7-yard line, but one of the receivers right over the middle of the field ran a post route and got behind the defense for a touchdown. I don't know if that's poorly coached. I almost assume that's on the players. Like, you can't let a guy get behind you in that spot. So Todd Orlando tried something else. On the 2nd, 3rd down and long, they rushed 3, they dropped 8, they got TCU off the field. Then we go to that final drive where TCU converted a 3rd and 11 and a 3rd and 14. On that 3rd down and 11, they rushed 5. They didn't rush Joseph Osai, who I think is their best pass rushing threat. They dropped him sort of as a spy, and they played man coverage on the outside with one safety over the top. And Montrell Estelle, one of those young guys, one of those guys who wouldn't be on the field if people were healthy, got beat on an out route, a deep out route. Then the 3rd and 14 was the zero blitz that just did not hit home, and you don't have the personnel to make that happen. So to answer your question, KD, I'm going to go 60% scheme, 40% injuries.
Okay.
And maybe the 60% isn't just scheme. It's just how these guys are coached right now. I mean, the fundamentals of this football
right,
team.
Tackling.
So 60% coaching related, 40% injuries. I mean, there's some plays on Saturday against TCU, some plays against Oklahoma, some plays against Kansas that if Caden Stearns or 100% B.J. Foster or Jeff McCullough, like if these guys are on the field, Chris Brown, if these guys are on the field, these plays don't happen. So you can't neglect injuries being a part of things, but I would still put the majority of the onus of the problem on this coaching staff right now.
Yeah, I'd probably go a little higher, but I think that's a rational way to look at it. I'd probably go 65. What I'm worried, Joe, is what if the reality is that Todd Orlando is just a one-trick pony and he just is not the coach that we thought, and it's more about that and less about available personnel.
I don't know how that's a worry. I think that kind of is a reality.
It is the reality, yeah, yeah.
Like, whatever was working in 2017 when he had, you know, an extremely talented defense with guys like Malik Jefferson and Deshaun Elliott and Puna Ford, whatever was working in 2017, I don't know if he's trying to replicate it in 2019 with younger players and it's not working, or if he abandoned what worked then. I'm sure the answer is out there. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but it's just not working. And at this point, the book's out. Everybody knows the blitzes are going to come. If you can pick up the blitzes, you're going to have guys either in facing 4 deep cover players, and guys in the Big 12 can get past those cover players, or – drop 7 or drop 8 that just doesn't appear to be well executed or well coached right now.
That needs to be the primary defense, though, moving forward.
Yeah, we need a primary defense moving forward, first of all.
Well, yeah, you've talked about that, finding an identity, and it may not be the one that you want, and it may be passive, and it may be very bend-don't-break. They need to be dropping 7 or 8 almost every
and
play.
And I thought they were close to it with that bracketing of Rager.
I liked the first half. I'm with you guys.
And I thought, okay, maybe they're going back to the winning game plan to where it was a 36-30 game, but two of those scores came as a result of special teams errors, and the defense held Oklahoma State in check. And I thought, okay, if they're going to bracket Jalen Rager with the same guy they used to bracket Tylan Wallace, mm-hmm. maybe this will have a chance, because a lot of what Oklahoma State and what TCU do on offense are really similar. But then they abandoned it. And I don't know if it's panic or if it's regressing to the norm for Todd Orlando to send those blitzes, but it's something, and he keeps getting it. And I know that's what I keep harping on. But, I mean, when it makes the game as much as it does, even if it only is a couple plays, I think it's worth – bringing up and making a point that's really what did it in that game.
I think every offense is coming in, BK, scheming against Texas, saying we have to hit on that, and we're going to get it. And once we see it, you can max protect. And these guys are getting the ball out way too quickly.
Right. I mean, you're making Max Duggan and Carter Stanley look like All-American type of quarterbacks. I mean, both of those guys had the games of their career against this Texas defense over the past couple of weeks, and it feels very predictable right now on that side of the football. And why I put more of the blame on the coaches versus the personnel, you have to coach to your personnel. Like Todd Orlando, it's not like Todd Orlando doesn't know Caden Stearns is out and B.J. Foster's not 100% and Chris Brown's out. Like, he knows what he has to work with. You can't put those guys on an island, one-on-one coverage against the receivers in this conference, and expect them to be able to cover dudes. It's as simple as that. So coaches generally are very stubborn. And I think these Texas coaches are no exception. And I think that stubbornness is hurting both coaches, Todd Orlando and Tom Herman, but especially Todd Orlando, who keeps resorting back to that blitz, which he always wants to bring pressure. That's part of his mantra. He wants to pressure opposing quarterbacks into mistakes. But if you don't have the personnel on the back end to do that, then you have to change it up a little bit. And we're not seeing that from Todd Orlando.
Yeah, the scheme that looks so good, Joe, that you referenced in 2017, where offensive coaches had to make the adjustment to what Orlando was doing. And I think a lot of that is the personnel you mentioned. It's complete. The script has been flipped completely. And now it's up to Todd Orlando, because the defense he's running right now, I mean, you maybe get some big-time Jimmy and Joes, and that can cover a lot. That's not a scheme that's going to work.
Well, I think those Jimmy and Joes have decommitted over the last week. Well,
that's the other thing you worry about, the overview and the trajectory of where this program's going. There was a lot of positive momentum, a lot of good vibes, and I love Texas. If I had a kid right now who was a junior or senior and was a defensive player, I'd be looking around too.
The one thing that also was really upsetting was on first and second down seeing 4-man boxes. Like, that just doesn't seem like sound football to me, just to have only the guys on the defensive line there and kind of hope that everybody else kind of does their job. And I think that only happened maybe one or two times, but I'm not even sure if TCU ran against that 4-man front both times, where it was just the 4 defensive linemen in the box. And I think the time they passed against it, they got an easy play, because the simple stuff, they can't execute right now at a high level. And I think that goes back to, you know, like you're mentioning, the balance. Is it 65-35, stuff like that? But, I mean, when you're running stuff that just doesn't seem like it has a chance to work from the start, there's bigger problems there. If you're running stuff and getting beat and you're like, well, that guy just made a play one-on-one, darn, okay, that you can kind of point a little bit more toward the guys maybe than the strategy. But when you're starting out not in a position to put whatever limited personnel you have, when you're starting out and not in a position to succeed, then the problem seems to be a little bit more off the field than on the field as far as the guys on the headsets.
Well, let me ask you, KD, what's your confidence level right now in Todd Orlando? I mean, everything is going to be looked at in the offseason. Happens every year, but especially after a disappointing season, which it looks like we're on track for a disappointing season here in Austin. Now, what's your confidence level in Todd Orlando, and do you think over these last 4 regular season games that he's coaching for his job?
Yeah, I do. And my confidence has just fallen immensely. And some of that is Paul. Let's give Paul some love. Paul's in Mexico, so if you're tuning in right now, everyone gets a trophy in the 1-0 podcast. We are family, and so we're going to be doing this a lot. And Paul was all over that. I mean, his confidence level early on this year was pretty low. I don't think there's any question, and I don't think he's the only one. I think Herman's got to be real about some of the coaches maybe that he's hiding. When I say hiding, I'll throw Bruce Chambers back in the day when Mac did that, and you can end up moving him around a bunch. And really have a come-to-Jesus moment with every single assistant. Is this the right guy for Texas?
And one of the things that happened in the last offseason is a lot of these guys were still on their original two-year deal when they first got here. And I think in the offseason, it became very, very similar and almost standard across programs at much of the rest of the country where assistants have one-year, you know, renewable deals. So I don't know. I can't remember if Todd Orlando and Tim Beck are also on that same schedule. I know Herb Hand isn't because he came in a year later.
I think Orlando has a two-year deal, doesn't he?
I think so.
But either way, a lot of these guys are going to be coming up, and those conversations are going to have to be had with Tom Herman and the assistants about, you know, what are you bringing to this program? Why are you going to succeed still? Why should I sign you for another year?
Yeah, loyalty, man. I mean, loyalty. We've seen it around here. Coaches too loyal to their assistants, and that's done some head coaches in here at the University of Texas over the years. I hope we don't see that from Tom Herman. Now, I know, and he's talked about it, he wants continuity. He believes in continuity on the staff. He wants everyone to be aligned, you know, kind of rowing the boat, moving things in the right direction.
He also wants disruption. We're not getting that, though.
PJ Fleck. But you're right. He also wants success, and he knows what he has to do to be successful as the head coach at the University of Texas. And I think he also knows that Chris Del Conte is not going to let this type of stuff fly. We're not talking about basketball here, where I don't know how much CDC really cares about winning. We're talking about football here. This is a big deal. This is how he makes his money. This is how his legacy is determined, too. So there might be some pressure, if things don't change over the last month, to make some changes on the coaching staff. And I agree 100%. I think Todd Orlando is coaching for his job, and I think he should be. Look, I'm glad that he and Tom Herman are boys, but, man, I mean, if we're being honest with ourselves, when Todd Orlando was hired, and I know his first year was very impressive, but he didn't really have the skins on the wall on his resume to become the defensive coordinator at the University of Texas, and neither did a lot of these assistant coaches. They just got the job because they had worked with Tom Herman at the University of Houston. That's nice. That's great.
It's different.
You want that alignment. This is different here in Austin. Yeah. So, yeah, if things aren't working out, which, once again, we'll see how these final four games go. Texas could go 4-0, find their way to the Big 12 championship game if they get some help, and this defense could show some improvement, and we'll have the exact same coaching staff going into next year. But if this team goes 2-2 down the stretch, which is very possible with road games at Iowa State and Baylor, then, yeah, 7-5, that type of stuff does not fly at the University of Texas, so changes might have to be made at that point. You got something, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked a lot about coaches and people as it pertains to the defensive side of the ball. But the offense in this past game was stifled. And that's what happens when you go against Gary Patterson's defense. He is one of the best defensive coaches this conference has ever seen. Tom Herman talked after the game about how he believes that was the best defense in the conference. And, you know, he's talked in multiple weeks about how with the defense struggling and with the personnel problems, they have to play complementary football. The offense has to help the defense out a little bit more.
But, Joe, I don't think you can say that with where this Texas offense should be. Like, I don't think you can sit here and say, oh, that's what happens when you go up against a Gary Patterson defense. Like, this team has a Heisman candidate junior quarterback, two senior wide receivers, one of them leading the country in receiving yards, talented running backs, and a loaded offensive line. And they're going up against a defense with lesser talent. I know there's a little bit more experience on TCU's defense than on Texas's defense, but, I mean, we can talk about the defense all we want, and that's obviously a continuous problem that we've had with this football team. You cannot turn the ball over four times in any college football game, but especially on the road at TCU and expect to win. And I think, I mean, we've seen it from this offense this year. They went up and down the field against LSU. But, man, against Oklahoma and against TCU, two of these last 3 weeks, they've hit a wall. They have hit a wall, and that is unacceptable with the amount of talent that's on this football team. You cannot turn the ball over four times, have dumb penalties, have the red zone woes that Texas had against the worst red zone defense in the Big 12. Like, that cannot happen in year three of this offensive coaching staff in year three of Sam Ehlinger.
Yeah, I'm with you. The only thing I would disagree with, I don't think the offensive line's loaded. I think they're better than they have been, but I do think there's some individual matchups they're not winning. I think the wide receiving core was overrated. I'll even throw myself in there, but I think everyone overrated him.
Yeah.
People thought Jake Smith was going to come in and light the world on fire. I think he's going to be good. I think Tyler Owens will be good. There are some just kind of some growing pains that you're dealing with. But, BK, I agree with you. And the reality is that every team is different, and you want to complement your defense, and you want to complement – do we play special teams?
We don't punt return.
Yeah, we don't
do
that.
We run backwards on punt returns.
After they drop
right?
it.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And they do – well, they do play special teams, but you break your shoulder when you're getting a three-yard game.
Unbelievable. Nice. It kind of showed you the way that game goes. But every team is different, and you know if you've got to carry more weight. Brad, you do it every day. I listen to the show, and you've got to carry a lot of weight with Trey. But you know that going in, right?
I'm going to refrain from comment on that one,
sir. You get my point on that, though?
Yeah, I get your
we
point.
We know the offense
one.
Has to. Right. And so they've got to almost be perfect for this team to reach what they thought they should.
Yeah, and four turnovers is not perfect.
No,
obviously.
No.
That's Sam Ehlinger's career high. He just didn't really look like he had anything going the right way except
how many
for,
of those were routes and a couple of those were bad throws, obviously.
One was the fourth down desperation.
Yeah.
You got to
make
a throw. So there's one.
Down
one,
by two scores.
One was the miscommunication over the middle. I couldn't remember who.
Duvernay?
I think it was Duvernay.
The
right. Yeah.
Pick?
Right. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then the other two I'm kind of blanking on.
Well, Jake Smith did a poor job running a route over the middle, sort of a deep post or a seam route. TCU, it's like the TCU defensive players knew the routes better than the Texas wide receivers.
They did, and that's where I'll really get on the Texas offensive coaches and the lack of creativity, even when they were winning and moving the ball this year. LSU does a hell of a job of this, and LSU will change up all their routes. There's not one formation or set you see, and you're like, all right, we know 90% of the time what the route combinations are going to be, what the concepts are going to be. And I think Texas needs to get more creative with that.
Yeah, and I think the struggles are really magnified and manifested in the red zone. I mean, the first four red zone trips for the Longhorns, they have one touchdown. I mean, going into this game, they're one of the best teams in the country at turning red zone trips into touchdowns. And going up against TCU, a defense that's not good in the red area, they couldn't get anything going. And Texas throws the ball on first down in the red zone a lot. Through the West Virginia game, on first downs in the red zone, Texas had thrown the football 79% of times. And that stuff shows up on film. And Sam Ehlinger on first down throws in the red zone was 1 of 5. They had 6 first downs in the red zone. They threw it on 5 of them, and he was 1 of 5. So you need to break tendency when you're going up against coaches like Gary Patterson. These guys have film. They watch. They know what you do. They don't have to look at Twitter accounts to see random stats that people throw out there. They watch. They know what to expect. And Texas, as great as this offense was early on, and it still is for the most part a really good offense, but they're becoming predictable. And we saw it with Oklahoma. Kansas just doesn't have the talent to get stops at this point, but we saw it with TCU. There's some tough offenses moving forward for this team. You can't be this predictable. You have to break your own tendencies, get out of your comfort zone a little bit, do things that maybe you don't always do, but things that aren't on film so the defensive coordinators aren't expecting everything that you do.
And also don't turtle. If you're gonna show new stuff, and I think they did a little bit in the first half with some Duvernay motion and at least a lot more than they had in the past, don't lose that if it keeps working. I think don't be afraid of some small change if it's going to make things a little bit better.
Yeah, I'd say the same thing to Orlando. Don't adjust, just to adjust.
Right.
And they were taking – I mean, guys, did it feel like in the third quarter, when Texas is down by 3 points in this game, it felt like they were playing like they were down 21 with 5 minutes to go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm a fan of a deep shot every once in a while, but why are you taking all these deep shots on first down and 10? Like, Keonta Ingram was actually having a pretty good day running the football. You've got Sam Ehlinger, and his legs are a big part of the success of this offense. Why did you take so many shots down the field, especially considering Brandon Eagles, one of your best deep ball weapons, isn't even playing? Like, that to me made no sense. They got a little desperate, I felt like, with their play calling because things weren't working offensively. They're just like, maybe this was Sam Ehlinger on his own. It's just like, hell with it. We need a spark. We got to get something going. And they tried that, I thought, a little bit too much. They got a little desperate, and they ended up punting a lot because of it.
They know the weight they have to carry. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, Joe, you're going to end up forcing stuff in life and in football.
And that's played out in this conference probably the entirety of the century. Offenses have been covering for defenses for so long, and now Texas knows what that feels like. And kind of to your point about going for it way more than you probably should have, being a little bit too aggressive, Texas, obviously, we've gone over this issue hundreds of times, likes to keep the tight end on the field. And it's something Tom Herman is married to, and divorces are hard, and he doesn't want to go through one with it, with this philosophy. But
what if she gets injured, though?
That, well, there's more on the market, apparently.
Well, yeah, well, what about that divorce? I was surprised that
you've got a second wife, a third wife, a red-shirting wife as well. You've got some options here.
Can find a wife in the portal, maybe.
Yeah.
But the thing is if you're going to do that and keep those guys in order to make things a little bit harder on the defense, oh, great. Okay, great. I understand that. But you got to notice that the defense is substituting, and you're losing that advantage of having the tight end on the field when they make the hockey sub. I mean, they know they're at risk of possibly hurrying up to the line and having a play run on them, because if only the defense subs, the offense can just go and run up and run a hurry-up play. But when you got Gary Patterson, who knows that he needs to make that happen, Texas not really operating with too much urgency, as it seems to be all year. They were running with tempo and making it work with tempo. When they got away from it, seemed to be a problem. When they got away from it, that allowed TCU to substitute on those third and longs and put in a great pass defense that kind of neutralized the whole point of that tight end being on the field. Now, I know Tom Herman may not go with straight up 10 personnel, and it sounds like from everything he's said, from what Tim Beck has said in availabilities, from what he showed these past 3 years, it's just not something he does. But maybe if you're going to go from those five wide sets that have been very good this year, maybe put in a couple of receivers, or at least replace the tight end's role with the receiver, especially if it's already obvious that TCU is going to make those subs and get their best pass defense out on the field.
Yeah, you're not fooling them with them saying, I mean, they're ready for you to go to five wide, even if the personnel shows something different heading in.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, and guys, I got to admit I was wrong. Like, I think all of us were kind of preaching this at some point. Like, we got to get Jake Smith on the field. Why is Cade Brewer out there? You know, Cade Brewer's not much of a threat on the outside, and he's really not, but he can catch the ball.
Right.
Like, I think Jake Smith is going to be a hell of a player. I think we all do at the University of Texas. But I think we're starting to find out why he's not on the field that much. Like, he can't catch punts. He struggles to catch passes. He dropped the deep ball. He's had some fumbling issues. Like, that's
and he's
been
got
most,
good hands. That's the
right,
word
exactly.
On him.
That's,
so
he's Shipley.
Upstairs,
we keep hearing that he's Shipley, and it's just not working right now. So it's hard to get that type of guy on the field. And we saw it with Brendan Eagles out. Like, when one of these three wide receivers misses time, we saw it with Colin Johnson for a couple of weeks, the other guys just aren't good enough. And you mentioned it earlier in this podcast, KD. Like, I was wrong. I think we all were wrong. We just assumed there was so much talent and depth in this wide receiving core, and there's just not. Like, outside of Johnson and Duvernay and maybe Brendan Eagles, I don't know how good he is. I know he's better than whoever else they got. But outside of those guys, there's just not a lot there. And it's tough to run a high-powered, super successful offense when you don't have receivers who can get open.
What I was talking about with, you know, that second guy in the depth chart earlier on defense is because it was a lot more talented. That like you mentioned, we thought it was a lot more talented in the wide receiver room, but John Burt is not a difference maker at this point. He's a great locker room presence. He's a guy who has given a ton to the University of Texas, but between the lines, there are better receivers than him. Malcolm Epps, he's a redshirt freshman. There's still time in his career for other things to happen and for him to make plays, but kind of a one-trick pony. And we saw that one trick against West Virginia in Morgantown when he went up and got that jump ball. Alvante Woodard got some of the first meaningful
snaps. What's
going
on with him? What are you hearing about him?
He's a deep threat. That's what he was in high school. And when he plays a position that has Brendan Eagles, more experienced John Burt in front of him, it's going to be a little bit tougher for him to get on the field. But with Eagles' suspension, he was second in line behind Burt. He got out there, and the few opportunities he did have, he looked very lost. So what, like you mentioned, that depth, that talented depth that everybody thought was in that wide receiver room probably isn't as talented as we anticipated going into the year, like you very well put.
BK, we had to come in for postgame after Georgia, and you and I think for a whole month were saying Texas is not there yet. The program's not there yet. The personnel's not there yet. Correct?
After Georgia?
No, before Georgia.
Before Georgia.
After that game, we were doing postgame, and there's just everyone was so excited and pumped up that maybe this thing was ahead of schedule.
Yeah, I'll tell you what.
The reality is, we know now.
I wonder what the attitude, what the mood of this fan base would be towards Tom Herman if Texas lost that game. Think about that. If you lose the Sugar Bowl, you end 9-5 with losses to Oklahoma and Georgia to end the year. And if you're 5-3 right now with players decommitting in the 2020 class, with guys skipping practice, with your defense as bad as it is right now, I wonder where people are with Tom Herman. I think you're right, 100%, KD. I think that win maybe expedited things a little bit, but I also think, look, I was never a guy who was expecting playoff for this team, but I sure as hell was expecting this to be the second-best team in this Big 12 conference. 7-5, which is kind of looking this team square in the face right now, I didn't see a scenario where that would happen unless Sam Ellinger got hurt, and he hasn't missed any time this year. So, yeah, maybe that win did expedite things a little bit, but, man, I'm curious. There's already some folks who are mad at Tom Herman and are questioning whether or not he's the guy. If he didn't win that game against Georgia, I wonder where people really would be. I think we'd have a lot more people calling for his head right now.
I think you're dead on, BK. Yeah, I mean, Joe, that's going to give him some time. And the reality, too, with this program you could say with Charlie, it was such a shit show. Mm-hmm. And there were so many things that were glaring. Say there have been some glaring things this year. But I think you have to try and give them as many resources, which I think CDC has done, and time.
And the other thing is, what's actually happened is that in that offseason after the Georgia game, Tom Herman got an extension until 2023. And I understand now it's a lot easier to maybe look back on that with a little bit of, well, why'd you do that? But think after the Sugar Bowl, just beating Georgia, multiple top recruiting classes. And the point that sticks out to me is that was Mike Perrin's contract. That was a contract Mike Perrin made, negotiated, put together with Tom Herman in the university. Chris Del Conte didn't hire Tom Herman, and I think that at the time it was Del Conte showing, hey, this is my guy, this is my coach. So I understand that, but if you want to go to the super pessimistic viewpoint and think, oh, maybe this is the beginning of where things head downhill for Tom Herman, how are you going to handle that $20 million? But I think that's getting way too far ahead, but I think that's a topic that a lot of people may have thought of with the extension. At least now looking at it.
And that's the purgatory Texas is in right now, is that you could still be really positive and say, guys, this is all injuries. I think he's going to make a couple moves with the staff, and I think they're going to get this thing going.
Yeah.
So that's the positive. Then I also understand people that are texting us and calling us and saying, no, I'm really, really worried. Not about Orlando, I'm worried about Tom Herman being the head coach.
Yeah, there's people making comparisons to Charlie Strong,
which is
ridiculous.
I think that's too far.
It's ridiculous. It's over the top, but that just kind of shows you.
If we kick off twice next week,
right.
Holler at me.
Yes. That's,
or have a losing season, which hasn't happened yet for
Tom Herman.
Right.
No, that's a good point right there. But, yeah, now there are people who are nervous right now. And, man, just the last week and a half for this program have not been good. If you go back to last Saturday against Kansas, I mean, I know that's a win, but that's an embarrassing win. And then last week you lose two defensive commitments. Today, we're recording this on Thursday, you lose another defensive commitment. You have a player transfer from inside your locker room.
You lose the whole family.
You lose,
yeah, really.
You lose an entire
family.
You lose
the talented one.
Obviously, you lose the game to TCU, which is, you know, Texas might not consider them a rival, but they're sort of one on the recruiting trail, and they play in your conference. And, I mean, they've won 5 of 6 against you now. It just hasn't been a really good week and a half for this program. And the sad thing is, I don't have a whole lot I can point to and be like, well, you should be optimistic about this right now. Maybe they turn things around, right? Maybe they are a completely different team after this bye week next Saturday against Kansas State. Maybe they go 4-0 down the stretch and they still end up with the top 5 recruiting class and all is happy right now. But, man, you know, the old statement, guys, this bye week couldn't have come at a better time. I think it's the opposite for Texas. Obviously, it's good to get guys back from injury, but this team just needs to go out and play a game. They need to go out and win a game just to get some positive momentum back in the locker room and also with this program. That's why, and we talked about it, Joe, last week, and I know, Kevin, you talked about it with Paul and on your show with Chad. We talked about how important the game against TCU was because you could already see some things falling apart and some reports of guys missing practice and other guys threatening to miss practice and this and that. You needed to win so you could have that to sit on for 2 weeks. You don't win that game. Now it really feels like things are falling apart. This team just needs to go play a game, and unfortunately, they've got to wait another 9 days before they can do that. So the old statement of bye week couldn't come at a better time, I think it could have come at a better time right. at this point just with the entire state of this program.
And the other thing is a lot of thought was that this portion of the schedule would be a good way for Texas to maybe run into a Big 12 title appearance. Kansas State was thought to be a program in transition with its first year under Chris Klieman. Iowa State thought to be one of the top three, maybe top four teams in the conference. Hasn't been great, but still is a good team and in that top four conversation. And now Baylor is about to be a top 10 team, possibly, if they win this game in progress and some other stuff happens and helps them out. Baylor could have themselves in the top 10. So a lot of what was thought to be maybe a portion of the schedule that would be manageable and, you know, good challenges but winnable games on the way to Texas's path to the Big 12 championship just aren't that anymore. And Kansas State is probably going to be ranked higher than you when this game happens, if not for sure.
Yeah, Texas Tech. If they beat Kansas this weekend, I mean, K-State's already ranked right now and Texas isn't. So if K-State beats KU on Saturday, then, yeah, they'll be ranked and Texas probably won't be.
Baylor's a really hot program. Like, that runway got a lot bumpier, yep. if not completely taken away from it.
There's a vacuum in this state and it hadn't gone anywhere.
Right.
Right?
I don't know what you mean.
I mean,
nobody stepped up
for
to
recruiting.
Take it.
It's open.
Mm-hmm.
It is open,
yes.
and someone
okay.
can take it.
Yeah, it feels that way, right? Yeah. It definitely feels that way. All right, it's the everybody goes 1-0. The everyone goes 1-0. We're combining
1-0.
The two podcasts, the 1-0 podcast with Joe Cook and myself, BK. We've also got our man Kevin Dunn from the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast, as well as his man Paul Wadlington out of town this week. But KD, I know you guys have a sponsor you got to give some love
we
to.
We do. We got to give Gabe a lot of love. He has been helping people out. Go to Gabe. It's Gabe at Mortgage Solutions, and they can do a lot of different things for you. He's a Texas grad, class of 99, good family guy, but he can really save you a lot of money. In fact, at Mortgage Solutions, they're faster. They close 93% of their deals on time, and they do it in an average of less than 30 days. The national average is 43. And they're also cheaper. On average, they save their customers over $14,000 over the life of the loan. Save some money and do it with the Texas X, and that would be Gabe. All you got to do is give him a call, 832-557-1095, 832-557-1095, or it is GabeKMG@gmail.com.
That's it. That's all you got to read.
Hey, I like Gabe. Come on, man.
Yeah, he's a good dude. I don't mean it that way. I'm just saying your co-host, Paul Wadlington, will be talking for another 10 minutes here.
Paul's gotten on himself about that. I think he's doing a heck of a job. I think you guys are too. This has been fun.
Yeah.
But if you're wondering where Paul Wadlington is, we'll be back next week. He's in Mexico, and Paul likes to hike and do all that stuff. And so he is
he's one of those guys.
He's one of those guys.
Outdoors
he's one of
guy.
Those guys.
He's searching for the next Brent Deerman, I guess. checking all the New Mexico NAIA schools.
All right, guys.
The equivalent.
Let's hit, before we give our locks of the week, which we have to get our man KD and involved on the stereotypical 1-0 segment.
I don't feel great about it. This is a preface.
Okay. Well, we never do. And our track record on this podcast is not very good. So if you miss it, you'll fit right in line. But, guys, obviously no game this weekend for the Longhorns, so I want to ask you this before we get out of here. Final four games, home against Kansas State, at Iowa State, at Baylor, home against Texas Tech the day after Thanksgiving. What are you predicting? What do you think is realistic for this Texas team? What's an optimist look? I mean, how do you think the final month of the season plays out for the Longhorns?
I'm expecting 2-2, and I think a realistic, optimistic outlook would be 3-1.
I 100% agree, but I don't know who the two
I don't
are
either.
Gonna be. That's
don't
the thing.
That.
They could show up and beat Iowa State and Baylor and then fall flat on their face against Tech at home after Thanksgiving again.
Yeah.
So I think 2-2 is the safe prediction, but just who it's gonna be, there is no safe prediction.
BK, give us some sunshine here, man.
You're asking me?
I know.
To do that?
I know. You're not the guy.
I mean, I'm still sitting here thinking this team could miss a bowl game right now, and they only need to win one more to get there.
Is 4-0, is that off the table?
I honestly don't think it's off the table. I mean,
I don't either.
I'm putting it at less
neither
than
5%. Neither is 0-4.
Right, exactly. I'm putting it at less than 5% that they go 4-0. That's about where I'm at right now because think about the road games this team has played this year. I mean, they haven't been good. The West Virginia game turned into a blowout, but that was a four-point game going into the fourth quarter in Morgantown against a really, really bad West Virginia team. Ames, Iowa, Waco, Texas, like those are tougher places to play, and those teams are just a lot better right now than West Virginia and TCU. And Texas has not played well in either of those two true road games so far. So, yeah, I mean, Vegas is going to have this team at 2-2, right? Texas will probably be favored at home against K-State, at home against Texas Tech, probably be underdogs in those two road games. I don't think they're going to lose to Tech at home. That's the one I feel good saying they'll at least for sure get that one. And I don't think they're going to lose to Kansas State at home either. But, yeah, I'm kind of with you guys, man. I'm sort of in that 2-2 boat right now, which that's a 7-5 football season. That doesn't get you to the Big 12 championship. And, I mean, that's got you an opportunity to finish 7-6 if you don't get the job done in your bowl game. Going from 10 wins to that, that doesn't work at a place like Texas.
Yeah, I laughed all summer anytime people brought up playoff stuff, but I definitely did not see 7-5. And unless there was a Sam injury or something like that, like you talked about earlier, the way it's unfolded has been disheartening and discouraging.
Right, and Sam Ehlinger is there's a reason we consider him so vital to this team's success. Is, you know, you mentioned your prediction would have changed drastically if he had gone down for any sort of reason. And
the bet's off at that point.
But
right?
To have a quarter that says so much about how good a quarterback he is in this conference, how much he's done at Texas, he's putting his name next to names like Colt McCoy and Vince Young in the record books, and it's not just because he's lucking into them or he's in a system. It's because he's played very well over the course of his, you know, 2-plus-year career. He's a quarterback that you can win conference championships with, and it would be – probably an indictment not only of Tom Herman as a program builder, but obviously the defense, if they're unable to even do more than compete for just one conference title in his 4-year career at Texas.
Yeah, well, agreed 100%. You guys, I mean, Sam Ehlinger gives me confidence, right? You feel like with number 11 on the field, you've got a shot to beat just about anybody in college football.
Definitely.
Week 2 of the season, he went blow for blow with the Heisman favorite with the number 1 team in the country in LSU. So having that guy makes you feel confident. No concerns.
A lot of drops, too, this year.
Absolutely. No concerns with – I've heard the word regression used with Sam Ehlinger, just based off how the last three games have gone. He balled out against Kansas, but the Oklahoma game and the TCU game, no fear about Sam. No,
they weren't his best games, but I don't think
he's trying
regression.
To do too much. I don't think there's anything mechanically. It's not like the changes he's made where he's really over the top now. Where all of that stuff is kind of reverting back to his freshman year.
No doubt. All right. I know it's been a long day for you guys.
Do you want to talk about the Brett McMurphy article?
Oh, should we get in
on
this?
Let's get to this before lock of the week.
It is a good little bye week topic, but it does involve the guys we've been talking about a ton. Brett McMurphy of Stadium, he was able to track down each FBS head coach and conference commissioner's favorite musical acts. And
Got Bob Bowlsby in there.
Yeah. Do you want to know what Bob Bowlsby? Bob Bowlsby's a big Zac Brown guy.
I was going to say opera.
I was going to say not really. I'm not sure I want to know.
And there's some real interesting ones up and down college football, like Kirk Ferentz of Iowa, Pat Green.
Really? That's pretty cool.
How about that?
I don't think he's ever really had any connection to Texas at all, but somehow he figured out that Pat Green was...
Is Pat Green more national than I think? Because I think of him as a huge act, but a Texas guy.
He might be, but I don't think so.
Okay. That's a cool one.
I figured he'd be
like a Creed guy or someone just kind of bland and ordinary. That just seems very Iowa.
You've got Doc Holliday, the Marshall head coach, who doesn't have a favorite musical act, so thanks, Doc Holliday.
Are you serious? Sucks.
God, just give an answer.
Fire him.
You don't have to go Les Miles if you want to bring that up and have it be a complete recruiting pitch, or like Mac did back in the day.
Come on. That's a national championship-winning head coach.
I'm playing Fitty on my iPod. But give Les Miles.
And then, of course, you've got Jimbo Fisher, who I think did something everybody can agree with and went with George Strait. But the Big 12 has some really interesting choices. You kind of mentioned it before already. Les Miles, he chose – and Les Miles, I believe, is either the first or second oldest head coach in FBS right now with Mack Brown. He chose 21 Savage, rapper 21 Savage.
I don't know who that is. It's young act, right?
Right.
Well, I think it's an authentic pick from Les Miles.
You got a
10-car
garage, right?
Yeah,
grab your balls and say something like Easy E. That'd be
Miles,
great.
Les Miles was probably in his 40s when 21 Savage was born, so I'm sure he's been following him for a long, long time.
Right.
You got to remember, Les has he's got college-aged kids. I think two players on KU right now, a daughter who went to Texas who's just out of college. I think he's got a high schooler at home, too.
Okay,
so
all right.
He's got a definite recruiting ploy, no question about it. But he probably has been forced to listen to some 21 Savage and some other rap music that he probably wouldn't listen to otherwise.
But he probably texted his daughter and said, "Who's cool and young right now?
Who
right?
should I say?
Yeah, who should I say?"
And you may not get this one either, Kevin. But if he was still at LSU, I would hope he would pick Boosie as his option there.
Boosie?
A little Boosie.
A little Boosie.
But for the rest of the Big 12, there's some really interesting choices. And I'll go down the list and I'll save an interesting choice or two for last. So Matt Campbell at Iowa State chose Van Halen.
Okay.
Which, you know,
you can see that.
It's a good rock. Yeah. It's a good rock band.
Whoa, don't short Van Halen like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I
a
like
great
Van
rock
Halen.
Band. Come on, man.
Chris
Kleiman.
With a better choice goes Def Leppard.
Whoa.
Not better choice.
Okay.
I do like some Def Leppard, but
I'll take Van
choice.
Halen.
Lincoln Riley, Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Really?
That's kind of his age, I guess.
Yeah.
Guy in
I
his
can
30s.
See that. I can see
Makes
that.
Makes sense. All right.
All right. Gary Patterson went with Eric Church.
Okay, I've heard of him. Is that country?
He's more national country than Pat Green would be.
But okay. He's not bad for national country.
No,
I enjoy
fine.
Eric Church.
Yeah,
he's not
fine.
That new Nashville garbage.
Matt Wells goes with Kenny Chesney.
I don't know country music.
You're a very educated music guy.
Yeah,
okay?
Right.
We're glad to have you on this conversation.
That's what I brought to it.
Speaking of national guys, Matt Wells goes Kenny Chesney and Neil Brown goes Brad Paisley. So
yikes.
National country guys.
Okay, I got it.
But now we're going to get into the interesting ones.
Trying to pick up some
Mike
co-eds
Gundy.
With that Brad Paisley pick? Come on, Neil. That can't be his favorite, right?
Mike Gundy of Oklahoma State in a mullet chooses Prince.
Whoa. That one, that's the coolest.
Yeah.
That's out of left field, but that's also Gundy.
Yeah. I would guess that's pure honesty, too.
Yeah,
from,
oh, yeah,
from Mike
right.
Gundy. That's awesome, man.
And last but not least,
I'd love to see Gundy at a Prince show back in the day.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that dude. Oh,
high
awesome.
Off his mind.
Yep.
Last but not least, two peas in a pod, Matt Rule and Tom Herman, the Dave Matthews Band.
Okay, I've been to a lot of Dave Matthews concerts.
That's not surprising.
Wow.
Ooh.
Right in the gut. Right
that?
In
is
the
that
gut.
Insult?
I was
that
about
a
to finish
is
it.
That a...
I was about to finish it because I was doing what all guys in college do.
Right.
I was chasing ass.
Right.
And
oh, that's where the tail was.
That's
in
where the
college?
That's where the tail was. Southwest South that's good, Joe. And my music taste is awful. So he's having fun on what we know if you listen to the afternoon show, and I like cheesy music. I didn't love them, but I have been to a bunch of their concerts, so I can't rip. You guys rip away.
So I was Dave Matthews Band blind heading into reading this article.
Are you serious?
Never really listened to them, knew who they were, but never listened to them.
The violinist is a real deal.
Never formed an opinion, and I tried to get through their first.
That can't be a good sign for a band if you go straight to the violinist. Come on, man.
I tried to get.
I'm being serious.
I'm sure he's great.
I tried to get through his first studio album, and I got to Ants Marching, which brings up another point.
It's a good song.
But I couldn't finish it. I just went about it. And there was some guy, there was a poster on Inside Texas. I brought this over there. And he made a very great point. It's like, you know, if you're walking into the office trying to get ready or you're putting on like your game day attire, you're getting ready to Ants Marching.
Yeah.
That's what
I mean,
you're
if that's what Tom Herman's listening to in the pregame, number one, that sucks. But number two, maybe that explains some things for why this team looks very ill-prepared, especially in first quarters of football games.
And there were three other.
Dave Matthews Band, by the way, up for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year.
Okay.
For the first time.
Yeah,
so,
Joe.
Come on, man. It'll be so hard on the DMV,
Joe's really
right?
picking on me. He came in, it's Halloween, he's dressed as Jim Harbaugh.
All you got to do is make an Astros joke for Joe, and that'll play.
That's true.
That'll play.
That is true. But Dave Matthews, three other FBS coaches chose him. The leading.
We're going to pull the cord on this early, or are we going to let it play out?
Ah, well done.
A little cranky jab there.
Yeah.
Ooh, that one hurt.
Keep him in there.
Anybody we could bring in? We've got a really good option out there to bring
he's
in.
He's just been
but
sitting
we're,
there.
We're just going to choose
what,
the janitor. Let's bring the janitor in.
We'll bring in let's finish off the podcast and then go get that A guy, that A-plus radio guy.
Yeah, instead you bring in the most polarizing figure in baseball in the past month. Anyway, whatever. But some of the other ones that just kind of at random, Lovie Smith of Illinois. This is a good one. George Clinton.
Oh, beard.
Oh, awesome.
His beard's almost that hair.
Dude, beard is so great.
Well, if Lovie Smith added the hair.
Oh.
That's what I should have been for Halloween. Lovie Smith.
I said that on the air. I said, any brothers listening, man, if you want a cheap easy costume. That's the way to go.
Oh, yeah.
How weird would a white guy look with a white beard, though? Like with the beard that Lovey's got these days? I don't know if a white guy.
I mean, I know you're Jewish, but you've heard of Santa Claus, right? You've seen one?
I've seen one. Yeah.
White guy with the white beard.
Yeah, you guys skipped my house 25 years in a row. Sure.
We've got a dishonorable mention and an honorable mention to finish this. Mike Bloomgren of Rice, real smart guy, coached at Stanford. Luke Bryan, who is about as bro country, is the reaction to Rice's head coach being a Luke Bryan fan would probably be overwhelmingly negative.
Gotcha.
That's a guy who thinks he's trying to recruit, but he's doing the opposite of that.
And then,
because Luke Bryan sells a lot of records, but like that, it's the high school girls. It's like the Taylor Swift crowd that's buying Luke Bryan stuff. So it's not good music
either.
No, it's bad.
But honorable mention to Seth Luttrell at North Texas for picking Jerry Jeff Walker.
Did he really?
How about that?
I buy that, man. Luttrell's old enough to like that. He's an Oklahoma kid. I know he went there, but he's from Oklahoma, I think, too. So,
and part of that Leach staff, I believe, or maybe even played for him. But, showing
little fullback H-back.
Showing he's Texas through and through with little Jerry Jeff action.
Like that. Good find right there, Joe. All right, guys, last thing before we get out of here. It's our lock of the week, and I have to congratulate myself. Joe and I have been doing this for, what is this, week four now?
Something like that.
Week four or week five, and both of us were 0-for. I think we started a combined 0-for-6 on our locks of the week. We each pick one college football game against the spread, our guaranteed can't-fail blood bank guarantee, and we started 0-6. But last week, I got one right. Whoop!
Oh, no.
Thank you to the Aggies. That's a pretty poor whoop effort. Apologies.
Which you didn't go to fish camp.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I'm not part of the cult.
Don't nail that one.
But picked the -11 against Mississippi State. They won by 19. Joe.
I picked LSU over Auburn.
Picked LSU -10, 10.5 to 11. They only won by 3 against Auburn. So Joe is still winless. So KD, even though it's your first week on this podcast and your first lock of the week pick, you have a chance to win one of these before Joe does. So we'll start with you, man. Give me your favorite college football pick against the spread this weekend.
I think they could definitely lose, and I think if they win by 3, and it's a 4-point spread. Take the Trojans.
USC.
Yep.
At home to Oregon, right?
Uh-huh.
How about that? Well, I'm seeing 4.5 right now.
Okay, so well even points. Better. Even better.
USC plus 4.5 against
Oregon. I may buy that up to 5. Can I do that on this show?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I'm kidding.
I mean, unless you pay me out of pocket.
Right, of course.
We don't do that here. All right, USC. Joe, what about you, man? What you got?
After just crapping on their head coach for decisions, I'm going to hope that maybe he makes some more questionable decisions on the football field. I got Marshall, 10.5-point favorites at Rice, and I think that they cover that pretty easy. I think Rice is still in the midst of a lot of program building, listening to Luke Bryan under under Bloomgren, and I think Marshall, with doesn't have a musical act head coach Doc Holliday, they're going to come in. And that was unrelated to the music article, I promise. That was my lock of the week heading
in.
I've got 11.5 for Marshall, so I'm only going to give you 11. I'm not giving you your 10.5 because I think you're lying to me here.
Give me the herd.
So we're meeting in the middle. I think the Marshall coach's favorite musical act is whatever the Monday Night Football Genesis halftime show is for that week. God, I love that. All right, this is going to this hurts, man, as a Kansas fan. But maybe the best rivalry in all of college football coming up this Saturday. The Sunflower Showdown, K-State at Kansas. There might be a full house or at least some people in the crowd in Lawrence this weekend. K-State's only favored by 6. K-State is a way better football team than Kansas is right now. I know Kansas is coming off a nice win over Texas Tech. I know they almost beat Texas in Austin a couple of weeks ago, but K-State is just more talented.
That in Manhattan?
It's in Lawrence. It is a road
at the
game
booth.
For K-State at the booth. But
we know no one goes
K-State
into Lawrence and wins.
Well, not Texas.
You don't just walk into the booth and
you
walk
don't,
out.
No, times have changed, right? There's two national championship winning head coaches, but only one at the FBS level.
Yeah,
that's
there
Les
you go.
Miles. But,
I wonder if that'll
K-State.
Be an – is that a night game?
2:30.
Okay.
So,
there's night games at the booth now, and it's a tough place to win at night.
Times have changed. I hate you guys so much. All right, that's going to do
this
it.
This was fun, man.
Yeah, that's going to do it for
so
this
much.
Week's episode.
Yeah, we'll do it again.
Many thanks to Kevin Dunn of the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast for filling in this week. Once again, Paul Wadlington out of town, but the guys will be back at it next week. And, of course, for Joe Cook, we are part of the 1-0 podcast together. Please email us every week. 1 gets a trophy at gmail.com. That's every, the number 1 gets a trophy at gmail.com. If you've got comments, questions, some topics you want us to discuss, if you're interested in sponsoring this podcast moving forward, shoot us an email right there if you would be so kind.
Also, Paul, just to make up for Paul here, review us, rate us.
Yes.
Give us
five stars. Subscribe, share, like, and give some love to our sponsors, Gabe with Mortgage Solutions, also Audiovisual Consultations, and Altstadt Beer as well. Guys, we're good to go. Any final thoughts?
That was fun, man. That was fun.
Enjoyed it. Thanks
Joe,
for coming
go home
in.
And rewatch that Astros game.
Oh. I was there to see it. I don't need to rewatch it.
Were you there?
I was.
Oh, man.
I've seen the last
three.
Brad
hates it. I kind of like this Astros team.
Yeah. I've seen the final game at Minute Maid Park each of the last three seasons. Only one of them was a win, and that didn't even clinch the...
That would have been, what, Game 5 of the 2017
which
World
was,
Series?
Hey, I'm not
That's
complaining
one of the greatest
at
games
all.
Yeah,
but we'll I saw that. I stayed till strike 3 on Brantley, and then I stayed till the Red Sox won the pennant last year.
Game 5, that would have been?
Pretty much, nah. So...
Well, at least you're getting to go. At least you're going to playoff games, man. Those are fun.
Yeah, no joke.
Yeah,
my dynasty missed those. Disappeared
and
moved to Orange County.
Like one long bad fart.
Yeah,
they win, and now the Cubs are just poof.
Hey, you got David Ross though.
Yeah, that's gonna fix it.
Grandpa Rossi. Everybody loves him, so that means he's gonna win like 140 games next year.
Right, he can buddy up with players.
Yes, that's just what you want. We've seen that here at Texas. All right, we're out of here for the night. Thank you all for listening. Always appreciate the love and support. Until next time, y'all have a good one and hook 'em.